Hello and welcome everyone to our next episode of The Graft, this time with Dr. Sanam Logavi, Assistant Professor of the Department of Hematopathology in the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, Houston, Texas, USA.
She talks to us about her background, career, influences, and general incredible passion for all things pathology.
And she has really that incredible passion. And now enjoy this conversation with Dr. Sanam Logavi.
Maybe we just start off by hearing about what your background is, where you trained, maybe what influenced you the most, and how you basically ended up where you are today as an associate professor in hematopathology in Houston at the MD Anderson.
Sure, happy to. I have to start by saying a lot of it has just been accident, happy accidents, but. You know, I'm originally from Iran, so I grew up in Iran and I went to medical school in Iran, and then I came to the U.S. spent a year in a research lab in Eugene Butcher's laboratory. He's an immunologist at Stanford, and then from there I went to do an APCP residency in pathology. And for those of you know your audience that are not familiar with pathology, so pathology in the U.S. is divided into anatomic pathology and clinical pathology, which is AP and CP. So AP is what you mostly do with a microscope, looking at tissue under the microscope, and then CP are disciplines like blood banking, you know, hematology, not hematopathology, but hematology, chemistry, microbiology. Those are all under the big umbrella of CP. So I did residency in APCP at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles in California. And then I came to MD Anderson and did fellowships in surgical pathology, hematopathology, and molecular pathology. And then I stayed on staff. I've been on staff since 2015, I guess for about 6 years now.
Great. What is it about pathology in particular that interests you? What was it specifically that made you want to go into pathology as a specialty? Yeah.
So there are several factors. I think, you know, the most important is before I actually, you know, came here and before I started applying for residency, my best friend's father was a pathologist. And, you know, I had seen in Iran, though, which is completely different from, you know, the way we do pathology here. So I'm not sure that you know, that was the best decision to make the decision based on seeing his practice. But essentially, that's what influenced me first. And then when I was doing my research year in Eugene Butcher's laboratory, he was in the Department of Pathology. So I got to rotate with the various pathologists and I would sit in on their sign outs. And I essentially, you know, I thought this is really fascinating. I get to see what's going on kind of behind the scenes. It's really not something I was, you know, I was aware of because pathology is really underrepresented in medical school. You know, you don't really get a lot of exposure. And it's a really good, you know, junction between clinical medicine and research, right? You get to do a lot of research. You get to help clinicians, you know, with their research, clinical trials. And even if you want like a full-on science career, you could easily do that in, you know, with pathology. So it gives you a lot of options and a lot of leeway in terms of having a flexible career that you can sort of design for yourself.
And like Nico and I were discussing when trying to prepare for this, and we were saying how interesting it is how different pathology training is in different parts of the world, for example, here in the UK. So in order to become a hematologist, I have to get my FRC path exams, and that involves quite a significant component of having to actually do pathology, have to sit down and like look at cells under the microscope and know what they mean and things. Whereas I think in Germany's, Nico, is it?
Have any of that? We can have some pathology training if we want to, but basically we're like dependent upon the self-interest we have, whether we are interested to do that. We are not paid for it. And in Germany, it's completely divided into hematologists and pathologists who do hematopathology. And that's quite frustrating because you always feel you're quite out of the box and just are dependent upon someone who knows this stuff, and you're just interpreting it.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you kind of think that people who are working, looking after patients with hematological malignancies and other hematological conditions, that they really should have a grounding in pathology to understand? Or
I think understanding it is very important. And I think understanding the limitations of what we do is very important. I don't, you know, it really depends on your practice setting. I can tell you that, you know, in our practice setting, which is a huge, you know, practice with, I don't know, like close to 20,000 bone marrows a year, it's impossible for our clinicians to, you know, run their clinics and then also look at, you know, the pathology slides. It's just not practical. But they all have a very good understanding of what we do, you know, the limitations of what we do, the implications of what we do. And the, you know, what Nico was saying is very similar to what we have here. Pathology is almost an elective for most, you know, most medical students as you know, as they start doing their clinical rotations. It's more heavily represented in like the basic, you know, the basic science curriculum. But when they do their rotations, it's really an elective. And then the same with the hem-onc fellows. You know, and I guess it's a little bit variable depending on the programs that they're in. But, you know, I can tell you from our own fellows, there are some that are highly interested and they, you know, they approach me, they email me, they say, you know, we want to come sit with you for a day, look at slides, or, you know, we're taking our boards. Can we come and review some, you know, common cases that may be questioned on the boards? But if they don't want to, they can get through their training without looking at a single slide. So, you know, it really depends on their, what Nico was saying, like their self-interest.
But let me follow up on this to maybe find this in between of what we are discussing, because I wrote one sentence from you, I think it was 6 hours ago, where you just ended up with a case and then said, what does this tumor want me to, what does it say to me? What tells me? And I think that's what bugs me the most. So there is a fascination with pathology for people who are not into it, who do not work with it. And obviously the hematology field is constantly, into this. So if you read a paper, you read pathology, but you have no clue what it is about, what kind of work lies behind that. So what do you think? What is it that we can learn from pathology, and what is the fascination about it that we all somehow feel?
You know, I'm gonna come back to your question, but I'll start with three little tidbits. I saw a thing on Twitter the other day. You know this thing Wordle going on. Everybody's posting their Wordles or whatever. So I mean I don't do that. But I know what it is. And then I saw someone had posted, you know, this is not a Wordle. It's just like the pathology slide that the pathologist showed at tumor boards. And I started thinking, you know, this is very true. We can go and, you know, show some slides. And obviously everybody's respectful. Everybody's trying to pay attention. But a lot of the times it's really difficult for them to actually follow what we're saying, because it's like a completely foreign language. And I think one of the problems with, you know, us not being able to engage medical students at an earlier stage is that it's very difficult to grasp the concepts early on. And it really takes you almost 2 to 3 years to start to you know, even understand what's going on these slides. You know, it's very difficult. It's not a very, I guess, tangible, you know, topic. And I think that's, you know, that turns people off early on, and it, you know, they lose interest. But I think once you start actually getting the concepts, it becomes very, very fascinating. And the other thing I want to mention, so among the three things, one is, you know, still to this day, if you look at publications or pictures of scientists, or there's always a microscope, right? Yeah. There's always a microscope. There's always like a picture. You look at like the modern publications in blood. Usually the front page of the cover is like a pathology slide. It's like a fish picture. It's all of it. So you really can't practice medicine without pathology. For sure, you can't practice oncology without pathology, right? So I think part of the fascination is it being so integral to the, you know, to patient care, but it's all going on in the background and it's elusive. So I think we just need to do a better job at making it a little bit easier for people to understand early on. And I don't know that I have the best solution for that, but I mean, I'm certainly trying with, you know, trying to post these things on Twitter. And I think some of it is, you know, with repetition, it becomes easier for the students and for the trainees to understand and follow.
And with all the way the world is changing, I mean, with the pandemic, like virtual, everything has become a thing. And I don't know whether it's the same in the States, but with pathology and as technologies are evolving and how and molecular genetics and everything is becoming more complicated and the techniques are getting more and more specialized, a lot of services are becoming more centralized so that they're taking place in the big centers with access to everything. Do you worry in the long term that that's going to mean that fewer and fewer trainees actually get that direct exposure to pathology and therefore are less likely to explore it as a discipline to pursue their career in?
I do. You know, in a way, it's like, it's, you know, pathology is going corporate as well, right? So yes, I do. But it's still not the same in the US. I think, you know, even though we have obviously organizations, you know, I don't want to name names, but big private organizations that do pathology, I still think academic medical centers and, you know, hospitals associated with medical schools have pretty decent pathology training, and they still have the numbers to support the trainees, you know, the specimen numbers to support the trainees. But I do worry about that because, you know, it's, to me, it's only exposure that can ignite that interest. If you're not exposed to it, you just, you know, there's no way you can be interested in it because it's, again, it's so difficult to digest in the beginning.
And for you personally, what, when you look back when you started the training and now with all the developments who came out, what for you personally changed the most in your experience? What is the thing that you notice you do now that you couldn't have done maybe at the beginning of your training?
Oh gosh, all of it. All of it. You know, I think it's really important to, you know, if there are any pathology trainees out there listening to this, I think it's really important to work on the fundamentals first, because if you try to, you know, right now practicing pathology is completely different than what it was 20 years ago. Right now, as a hematopathologist, I have to be, you know, really proficient and good at analyzing flow cytometry data, at interpreting molecular data. In addition to, so only being a good morphologist is not good enough anymore, right? You have to kind of incorporate a lot of information into your decision making and into your thought process before you can actually help a patient. Right. So right now, me just looking at a slide and saying this patient has acute leukemia is certainly not enough. It's not nearly enough for anyone to make any therapeutic decisions. So I think that can be very overwhelming in the beginning. And my personal, solution for that has been to subspecialize. Right. So I'm heavily subspecialized in one area. So my area, you know, practice is very, very narrow, and it's easy to become good at something when you're super subspecialized because you're seeing that every day in and out. It's like, you know, it's like a surgeon who only does Whipples as opposed to the general surgeon who, you know, does appendectomies and does Whipples. And, you know, it's easier to become very good at a very narrow subject. But for some people, they, you know, they don't like to limit their practice to one area and they want to remain more general. And that's also something you can do, at least in the US still in pathology, but that's more like the private practice model, right? Where you get to see all sorts of things, but at the same time, you know, your practice is not as granular as the subspecialty, subspecialty based practices. But then you can always send consults. You know, you can say this case is too complicated. I'm going to send it out to a specialist for a consult.
Just another follow-up question on that just came into my mind, because you already answered it with the subspecializations. But if I have a patient now with AML as a trainee, and I read a lot of molecular information, you said, but I'm confronted with diagnosing this patient and sending one specimen of bone marrow to the pathologist. But all in my personal experience, I find an overwhelming, let's say, information on this molecular thing, on the new technologies, next generation sequencing, this whole thing. And then I need to integrate that. And that's what I like struggle with, to say, okay, where do I need to focus myself? Do you also experience that, or what's your thought on that?
You know, again, I think being at a center like ours and being super subspecialized, it makes it a little bit easier, because, you know, we're dealing essentially with the same entities. And it's, you know, I read all of the literature on hematologic malignancies, but then, you know, if you put a breast cancer slide in front of me right now, I could tell you that it's breast cancer, but I don't know how to fully work it up, you know, anymore. It's because I just don't do that anymore. So I think I think my recommendation to the trainees would be to first start with the standardized guidelines, right? So let's say read the NCCN guidelines, you know, obviously the summarized versions and pertinent versions if you're in the US or ELN guidelines. And that gives you an idea of what's important, what are the important molecular markers that you definitely want to know about, you know. What is prognostic? What is predictive? What do you need to know before you make a treatment decision for the patient? And then also, you know, for me, Twitter is a great source of information because it keeps you up to date, right? You see, nowadays, everybody does tutorials on their publications. Even the most complicated papers have usually a summarized tutorial by their first author, by the senior author. So you get to get, you know, some of that information kind of indirectly. But I think start with the fundamentals and start with the established guidelines and then take it from there. You know, you don't need to know all the molecular markers. That comes with time.
Now, for any hematology trainees who might be interested in thinking about developing an interest in pathology, do you have any particular advice or any particular resources that you direct them to?
Oh, so it's interesting that you asked that, because I have maybe good news for you. So we have, I think this is the first time we're publicly talking about it, but I hope that it's okay with the other co-founders. So we now have two ongoing efforts. One is, do you guys know Kamran Mirza? He's also very active. He's a hematopathologist on Twitter. So Kamran and I are teaming up with a few of our clinicians here and Anand Patel in Chicago. And we're doing it's a project. It's called the Heme Reports. So this is going to be purely focused for hematology trainees. It'll kind of be like morning reports, but for hematology trainees, it'll be case-based discussions that incorporate clinical hematology with pathology. And I think it'll be really good to get just like an overall grasp of how pathology is used for therapeutic decisions, for just like your day-to-day practice. And then the other effort is actually with a couple of current trainees who are soon to be assistant professors. So one is Curtis. He's Curtis Akowitz. He's our leukemia fellow right now. So this is a project, and it's called House of Heme. So this is going to be purely focused on training clinical hematologists in pathology. So we're going to do introductory lectures. We're going to have slides. We're going to have kind of like puzzles, journal clubs, and, you know, things that make learning pathology a little bit more fun for the non-pathologist. And I really hope that these are going to be, you know, educational resources that hematology trainees can use to kind of educate themselves a little bit better in pathology.
Are these free to access?
Ah, absolutely. Yeah. They're going to be nice. Really. So, you know, we're going to make announcements on Twitter, and I'll make sure to tag you guys so you know. But yeah, they're going to be free, and they're going to be, you know, it's essentially the aim is just to like educate clinical hematology trainees in pathology.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the opportunities today of like virtual opportunities to educate yourself, et cetera, but what did you influence the most in your training? You said the pathology decision was influenced by father or friend, but what you, over your career, what do you think had the most, the biggest influence on your decision-making?
I think my mentors. You know, I think it sounds a little cliche, but I think it's true. You know, I've tended to gravitate towards people that I admire. You know, I wanted to be like them. So I kind of tried to, you know, take away the things from them that I thought, you know, I could use to progress in my career. And I think, you know, there are several people that have been instrumental in my career development. One is my chair, Dr. Jeff Medeiros. He's a lymphoma pathologist. He's been instrumental. Joe Curry, you know, Sa Wong. These are hematopathologists at MD Anderson. They completely have revolutionized the way I think about pathology. And, you know, the way they teach pathology has inspired me throughout my career. And I think, you know, one of the things that maybe I would, you know, this is again more for pathology trainees than for hematology trainees. But I think, you know, sometimes it's easy to become completely dissociated from what's going on in the clinic and what's going on in, you know, in like the patient facing areas. And I would, you know, I think one of the things that's helped me in my career a lot has been I've always tried to be in very close communications with the clinicians here. And I think it's really helped me both in my career and in, you know, like in my professional growth and in becoming a better pathologist. So that's one thing that I would, you know, highly encourage.
And where do you see yourself, let's say, in the next 10 years?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question. Honestly, I don't know, but I'm not going to answer that question. No, I mean, you know, I think every academic physician wants to make an impact, right? And I think, I mean, to me, the most important thing is making an impact, both for patients and for education, because I think, you know, education is super, super important to me. And I think it's kind of like I think of it as a legacy, right? So I hope to, you know, to work on developing these efforts, having impact on trainees, you know, obviously developing more leadership skills, maybe having a leadership position. Those are things that I think about and I hope to do.
Yeah, the question, I just asked the question. I'm sorry if it was too personal, but
not at all.
But I think that is one of the, like, hidden questions every trainee has is should I dare to see myself anywhere, because in the meantime anything can happen, as you said. I can like come into a new mentor that I'm totally fascinated by and I leave the hospital and go someplace else, or find maybe a wife or a husband or friend and I follow them. So the future is sometimes always this kind of like fork in the career of trainees. In my experience, nobody really wants to talk about it. Everybody says, yeah, I'll see where I can go. I'm not sure.
You can hope and you can certainly plan, but it's, I mean, sometimes there are circumstances that are completely out of your, you know, your control. And sometimes life takes you in different directions. But I think one of the things that I would say is, you know, like be ready for opportunities, be ready to take advantage of opportunities. And to me, watching, you know, seeing so many successful people around me, I think what stands out in the people that are, you know, just extraordinary is that they've always, like, they're hungry for new opportunities, right? They take on new opportunities and they're not afraid to be challenged. So I think, you know, it's sometimes, you know, saying yes is scary. Taking on responsibility is scary. But I think until you actually do that, you know, you never take the next step. You never become a better version of yourself, which is ultimately, you know, the goal in life, right? Is to just become a better version of yourself every day.
But maybe you can talk about a bit, or you can talk, or you maybe know about it a bit more, where you see pathology in 10 years. What do you think will make most difference in developments? What is maybe currently going on we don't know about yet, because it's an early phase development. I mean, machine learning is a big thing. Everybody doesn't dare talk about it, what the kind of real influence it will make in the next years.
I mean, I think practically speaking, I think machine learning and artificial intelligence are going to be very impactful in the next 10 years in pathology for sure, because there are, you know, various tedious, but, you know, relatively easy tasks that we do as pathologists that are completely amenable to artificial intelligence. And, you know, like scoring immunohistochemistry slides, like finding organisms on slides, these could easily be done with very simple, you know, AI algorithms. And I think a lot of what we do is going to be done by, I don't think, you know, with the regulations and like licensing and everything, I don't think pathology is going to die as a specialty. I think the way we practice is going to be very different, just like it's different now compared to 20 years ago. So I think we're going to be using artificial intelligence to improve our practice and hopefully, you know, focus on more difficult tasks with like the human brain delegate some of the more tedious but easy tasks to artificial intelligence. But I also think that, you know, that's one thing. But I also think that artificial intelligence is going to be instrumental in you know, oncology for sure, because, you know, if you think about it now, the way we classify diseases still and to this day, you know, I don't know if you guys saw or not, but there's like 3 publications out in the past month talking about blast counts in defining leukemia, right? Whereas you really want to be focusing on genetics, on patient characteristics, on, you know, other intrinsic tumor characteristics to define a disease. And so I think, you know, applying what we've learned in terms of genomics in the past 20 years to disease classification and the way we think about disease biology is going to change the practice of pathology in the next 10 years for sure.
And then a last question, because you said we maybe the goal should be to train hard and to get better. I have a question for myself, because I experienced it in my first days in clinical care. Maybe Claire also had the same experience when I sent my first bone marrow specimen to pathologists, and I received that quite back with a yeah, the question was too vague. What should I look for? What do you want me to tell? What do you tell me? What would be? Do you also have that experience where you're quite angry that people just sent you something and somehow like, yeah, please do that for me and I can go on with my life?
It depends. I think, again, being, you know, at the place that I am, we're very privileged because we, you know, we have access to the patient's medical charts. We know exactly what's going on. There's detailed notes in the chart. So I never have that issue where I get a specimen and I don't know what to do with it, because the question is always clear. The clinicians have very detailed notes. But I can see that if you work, you know, at a reference lab, it can be very difficult to practice pathology without appropriate clinical history, right? So I would say try and provide as much useful information to your pathologist, because, and, you know, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but this is something I learned in my pathology training, is the phraseology garbage in, garbage out. So if you don't give if you don't give good information, you're not going to get good information. And this doesn't, some diseases are very obvious. I don't need clinical information to diagnose a CLL, but let's say if you're looking for hemophagocytosis, like tell me that you're looking for hemophagocytosis, something like that, right? So that I think is important. But I also think that, you as a clinician also get better with time, right? So you learn what are the questions that you should be asking your pathologist. Like when should you actually pick up the phone and talk about this patient with your pathologist, as opposed to like a very straightforward case for them where, you really don't need to discuss much. So that becomes easier with time too. But I think, one of the things that you mentioned is, becoming better with training. I think it's important to realize that as physicians, even with, even when you're a full professor, you're kind of still in training. You're still learning every day. And that's actually what I love the most about working at an academic center like this, is I literally learn something new every day just by seeing these difficult cases, by being around people that know more than I do. And, I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it because it's true. Sometimes I don't believe that they pay me to do what I do because I love it so much. I look at these slides and I'm so fascinated by it. Sometimes I lose track of time. I'm just sitting in my office looking at these slides. And I'm just like constantly fascinated by what I'm seeing and what's going on. Like the PD-1 case that I posted today, I was actually looking at, historical samples from this patient to take pictures for a case submission. And then I looked at the PD-1 stains and I said, huh, isn't that interesting? Like, what is going on with this patient? I've never seen this before. This is something new to me. So I would say, just think of it as lifelong learning. And, I think we're in a privileged situation where we just get to learn new things every day. How many people can say that?
And I think going back to what you said, often it's like with pathology, it's sometimes the fear of the unknown. I know for myself, the thought of having to sit in a lab and look at blood films, it made me question whether I actually did want to go into hematology here in the UK, where we have to do that. Wow. Actually, once you get into it and once you start to like really appreciate and be able to do it, now there's nothing I enjoy more than being able to like see the patient and then being able to be like, oh, that count something I'm worried about. I'll just go and have a little look or like speak to someone who's had a look. And I think the enthusiasm you have for the specialty is incredible. And this has been a really, really great discussion. And thank you for giving us your time today. And
oh, of course. My pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to you both.
And if we can share your heme reports and House of Heme, and we will definitely do that. Just send it across.
Yeah. So if we go live, I'm definitely going to let you know. And perfect. For sure, that would be great.
Oh, brilliant. And we definitely look forward to seeing them for sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much, you both. This was lovely.
Thank you. Have a good day. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.